Good morning. Good morning, my friends. It is June the 14th, 2023. I can't believe it's June the 14th, 2023. It's Wednesday, and it's just after 2 a.m. So if I sound a little bit out of it, maybe you can excuse me for the fact that it's just after 2 a.m. That's a big old 2 a.m. here in Skompton, Utah. Yes, here in Skompton, it is still darkness, a time of wombats and witches, a time when the Grimbley folk huddle in their caves next to a smoldering fire, a fire that they toss more ham hock grease onto, as they stare into the darkness bleakly. But it is Wednesday, it is June the 14th, it is 2023, and like I said, it's just after 2 a.m. here in Skompton, Utah. And to start things off this morning, I'm going to give you your ZeroHedge.com headlines as of 2:06 a.m. Federal Open Market Committee, Fed Open Market Committee, Fed whatever bullshit committee, preview, skip or pause, who the fuck knows. Like I said, brothers and sisters, Jerome Powell is a man chasing a tiger being chased by a bear. He's being chased by a bear, and he's chasing a tiger. How do you think this is going to turn out? Tucker Carlson pinpoints the exact moment that permanent Washington decided to send Trump to prison. Wow, okay. That guy's been sheep-dipped. Nigeria's central bank governor suspended and arrested after waging all-out war on cash. That's why he sent me the email. Lukashenko's latest nuclear bluster comes same day as U.S. signals depleted uranium approved for Kiev. Great news. The EU could ban imports of Russian natural gas by pipeline. Wow. Escobar, China's Belt and Road Initiative has fundamentally transformed global geopolitics. Whoa. Walmart builds new beef plant to bolster meat supply chain. Bullshit. Unmasking the CDC's medical CIA. The everything else catch-up trade is kicking in. Wow, that's some real wishful thinking. It's buy the rumor time for Chinese markets. Well, the rumor tells me that China's a shithole. Orange County anatomy teacher placed on leave following clip discussing sex toys and sexual pleasure. First people sickened by the monkey herpes were Chinese scientists at Wuhan Institute of Virology, says U.S. government sources who are experts on the monkey herpes. Government overreached in identity theft case, Supreme Court rules unanimously. Report alleges Catholic hospitals linked to transgender surgeries and abortions. Wow, color me unsurprised. Cough, 5th century. Cough, Roman Empire collapses. Cough, then you got the Catholic Church like a zombie. Putin declares Ukraine's counteroffensive failing. Mulls grain deal exit. Well, that's good for keto. The collapse just won't stop. 10 weeks later, Transheiser-Busch sales still cratering, down a record 27%. 10% of the $4.2 trillion in U.S. COVID relief was lost to fraud, waste, and abuse, somebody says, right? Homophobic statement of the decade, Johns Hopkins faces backlash after changing definition of lesbian. The pandemic of nuclear trash talk by Victor Davis Hanson, neocon. Yeah. And that's it. That's your headlines as of 2:06 a.m. on ZeroHedge.com. If they updated them since I started talking, well, that's your problem, and I don't know what to tell you. So here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. If space is hard, the moon is impossible. If getting to space is hard, if getting people to space is hard, then the moon is impossible, and so is Mars. And I've been beating up on space for a couple days now, but here's why. To me, the shocking thing about space isn't really the mission to the moon. This isn't very shocking to me. I mean, it could be real, it could be fake. I don't want to talk about the moon specifically right now. What's shocking to me is that in the 60 plus years of people going to space, the total unique number of people who have been to space is still less than 700 people. And I keep thinking on this, like, you know, they want us to believe that we're going to go to Mars, right? And we're going to land people on Mars. Elon Musk is going to take his Starship to Mars, and you're going to have martinis on Mars. Ignore the fact that Martian gravity, if you believe what you're told, is like what? 1/8? Earth gravity. So you're going to have health issues over time. Things aren't going to work out exactly as you expect. Ignore a bunch of stuff. Ignore the fact that, yeah, you can't breathe in the atmosphere. You're going to have to terraform the place or live underground. The bottom line is, it's like David Bowie said, you know, Mars is a cold place. Or no, was that Elton John? Elton John said, Mars is cold and it ain't no place for kids. Yeah, that's Elton John. And he's right. Elton John was right about being a rocket man and going to Mars. But it's not, Mars isn't the point. Okay? Whenever I bring up the number of people that have been to space, the retort I get back from space enthusiasts is, well, space is hard, Dan. It's hard to get people to space. Well, fine. But how much harder is it to go 250,000 miles and back? How much harder is it to land people on the moon and have them spend 3 days there? Okay, a couple days there in temperatures that swing hundreds upon hundreds of degrees throughout the day. How hard is that? How hard is it to deal with that? Either, and actually in the case of the moon, In constant sunlight, really, or if you happen to be behind a mountain, in constant shadow. So the real question is, how do you believe they did what they did with the lunar lander, with going to the moon, if you're going to come back to me and say sending people up the bare minimum, which is like what, 50 miles, is hard, but going 250,000 miles is easy, and going hundreds of millions of miles to Mars, well, that's no big deal either. But going into orbit or like just hanging out in orbit is hard. If you're going to believe in moon bases and Martian bases, there should be hotels orbiting the Earth by now. Hell, back in the 60s, there were major hotel chains that were claiming they were going to open hotels in orbit. Okay, ignore the moon, ignore Mars, ignore going to the stars. Those things are probably just, you know, fairy tales. But on a practical level, it was decades ago that hotels talked about building a hotel in space. And yeah, you're still going to read articles. Oh, Dan, I read an article about Inflatozon company that's building a plastic bromeli and you can attach them together and build your... Fine! Build your fucking hotel in space. It's been a second. Okay? Stop talking about this bullshit and make space work. My definition of space being functional is that you start matching the numbers of people that like cross the Atlantic in a jet airplane. You got to start heading that direction. But so far, it looks like bullshit. It looks, it clearly is a more unique club than many, to include winning the Powerball lottery or the lottery in general. It just, it doesn't seem like the odds of ever going to space on a basic sort of like naive counting rule probability level, you know, counting jelly beans in a jar, so to speak, it doesn't seem like you're ever going to go to space. Neither am I. It's never going to happen. Okay? You can come back, well, damn, they said next year that Amazon's blue butthole, and next year, you know, Burt Rutan and Virgin Galactic, and it's always next year. It's always next decade. It's always about 1 or 5 or 10 years away. And then when you get about a year away, or in some cases a few months away, well, it's next year again. Or we had to cancel we don't have the budget for it. I mean, meditate on this, brothers and sisters. Back in the 90s, the early 90s, when George Bush Sr., you know, former CIA director, was president, there was a lot of talk about building a reusable Earth to Mars nuclear-powered spaceship. And everybody was saying, oh, but it would be too expensive. We couldn't build it because it would be too expensive. Understand that there are people who've reviewed the comptroller accounting data for the Department of Defense going back to the 90s. And what they've found is the DOD has misplaced as unidentifiable maybe $20 trillion. And back then it was like, well, we can't afford the $200 billion. Yeah, $200 billion is a lot of money to do something stupid. But the bottom line is, if your excuse is you don't have the money, at this point in time, I can call bullshit. They always had the money. That Battleship Galactica-style nuclear starship that the Bush administration wanted to build in 1991, that would have been a drop in the fucking bucket of wasted money in the last 30 fucking years. So yeah, I'd say they should have built the fucking starship, but they never did. Why? If your comeback is they didn't have the money, I can already tell you, like I said, that's bullshit. So why? Why? What's the excuse? It's not the money. It's not the cash. Is the excuse that you can't find people to go to space? I think if you had a colony on Mars and you were to tell people that there's a 50% chance that you're going to die heading there, and there's a 1 in 10 chance that you'll die the first 5 years if you're lucky enough to get there, I think a lot of people would still sign up. And maybe it wouldn't be the people you wanted, but it never really is it? The people that end up on the ships that go across the oceans to these new horizons and new frontiers, these are usually people running away from something. These are usually people that are broken down and beat down. The types of people that the British Navy would wander the harbor fronts looking for with a bat and a little, you know, paddy wagon, they weren't looking for true believers, ocean-goer heroes. They were looking for whatever fucking slob they could beat over the back of the head and get onto their boat. So the comeback I get is space is hard. And my response is, if space is hard, then I agree with Dr. Freckles. The moon is impossible. Mars is impossible. If you cannot reliably, cheaply get people to orbit at this point, and let's talk orbit, okay? That's a place people would go. They would go to orbit. People would travel to orbit. Rich people would go to orbit. If you can't safely and cheaply get people to orbit in the year 2023, then I agree, space is hard, and probably Mars and the moon and a lot of other fucking places that you tell us you're going to go are impossible, and they're never going to fucking happen. Next topic. Dan, you're so mean-hearted, I can't believe you, how mean-hearted you are about all of this space shit. I'm not mean-hearted. I'm not. I'm applying the same level of fair criticism that an atheist would apply to my Christian beliefs. You come back to me and say, how do you know there's a God, and why couldn't it all be random, and look at all this evidence. I come back to say to you, why haven't we returned to the moon in more than half a century? And you can have all kinds of stare at the wall bullshit and say things like, I don't understand. I don't understand. It's a really simple fucking question, dumbass. Why, in more than 50 years, have we not come back? I'm not going to listen to you. We're going there next year. I've been hearing we've been going there next year for a couple decades for 20 years. So don't tell me about next year. Why? In the last half century plus, have people not gone back? Period. And if you can't answer that question in a reasonable way, then I feel like I have a right to call bullshit. This is the thing about proving you can do something. Let's think about cold fusion. You remember Pons and Fleischmann in the year 1989, Bo Blimp Doc? Remember that? Maybe cold fusion is real. Maybe it's not real. Maybe it's a one-off. Maybe a micro black hole was moving through the laboratory of Pons and Fleischmann at the exact moment they had their great discovery. Who the heck knows other than Jesus, right? Who the heck knows? But here's the deal, and it's a very practical, simple deal, and this applies to every scientist, every engineer, and every grifter. If you tell me you have an over-unity device and you give me a diagram to build it and I build it and I can't reproduce what you did, then I have a right to write a paper as a scientist saying I call bullshit. One of the foundational cornerstones to the modern scientific method is reproducibility. Which means you publish a fucking paper, you say you did something, and then someone else says, yes, you can do it. The same thing applies to voyages of discovery. Somebody can say, I went to the New World, and I found the golden princess, and I made love to the tree people. Fine, Christopher Columbo. You went to the New World, and you had really wild sex. Now, we're going to go visit and verify some of your bullshit, okay? That is part of the scientific method, verification, reproducibility. If I cannot verify, if I can't reproduce, I have a right to call bullshit. And that's a simple example of what should go on in the scientific and technical fields. So once again, I say, why in more than half a century has no other nation been able to reproduce the bullshit we said we did between 1968 and 72? There are no good answers, my friends. There aren't. But if we're going to claim we're all about science, let's practice it. Okay, next topic. There is a hyper vacuum. A super emptiness. Using massively pulsed supermagnets, we can stretch the vacuum beyond earthly limits, pondered Kepler-Daniels. A spider had nested in his ounce of premium sativa magic time hybrid flower, and thus there were all these tiny red spiders running around, and Kepler didn't notice. He just tossed some of that sweetness into his grinder, and then into his volcano. Amidst the glow of his lab equipment, he snuffed in that spider vape, and a massive brain booger was born, an inspiration for something called Zector Space. What if the vacuum itself, pure space, is as poorly understood as zero-point temperatures or the core of the sun? What if the vacuum of nearby space isn't nearly as empty as supposed? What if using advanced materials and the engineering of pulsed magnetic fields, you could open up a hypervacuum, a vacuum beyond what we currently consider empty? one effect of the hypervacuum envelope would be super buoyancy. One could construct dirigible airships, eschewing the use of helium or hydrogen lifting gases, but instead use a vacuum ship envelope in a state of super buoyancy to reach very high altitudes, perhaps up to 200,000 feet. A rocket gondola plus this vacuum buoyancy system would allow spacecraft to maneuver to altitude prior to turning on their rocket engine, which could be optimized for the vacuum. And the same system could fold up into the ship like insect wings. This kind of system would allow the exploration of the solar system and enable low-velocity re-entry techniques into the Earth's atmosphere, opening the possibility of practical space mining. This would be big for space. He called his experimental device the lever, in honor of Archimedes and his famous quote, "Give me a lever long enough and I'll move the world." But in this case, the lever was a lightweight vacuum seal-proof sack in the shape of a spear, with both elastic and vacuum seal capabilities, and hundreds of tiny magnets woven into the sack or spear, all designed to create interacting pulsed waves. At startup, the sack is empty, vacuum removal of all gases. Then the magnets begin to pulse, and a structure of interacting magnetic fields provides structure that exerts force and transforms the spear into a lightweight vacuum balloon that floats above the lever apparatus chained to the floor. For experiment number one, Kepler set the total charge to 2,000 volts and adjusted the field propagation to 1.5 Vs, that is 1.5 times what is considered standard vacuum. The chain holding the lever's spear was also attached to a force meter, measuring torque and total lifting force or strain. Surprisingly, the numbers indicated that the lever system was at half the strength of the chain, and the power was still below 20%. Kepler did his experiment at 3 vacuum space, 3 times what is considered standard vacuum. At 3 times standard vacuum, the concrete foundation creaked. The spear expanded from a 3-foot diameter to 8 feet. The chain was still holding, but something peculiar began to appear on the voltmeter. Up until this point, the voltmeter indicated a standard drain of 12 volts from the power supply to the pulse capacitance array and onward to the network of the network of magnets woven into the vacuum-safe material of the balloon or spear. Now, at 3 times vacuum space, it indicated a back charge. It seemed to be returning electrical power back to the system. The final test or experiment would have the lever device set to 10 times vacuum space. That was excessive and dangerous, and Kepler knew he was taking risks, but he needed to see what might be possible. He had to move the apparatus outside because at 10 times vacuum space, he estimated the spear might have a diameter of 50 meters, and this would be too large and would possess too much lifting buoyancy. Kepler anchored the spear to a 50-ton anchor using a high-strength steel cable and several harness points. He did not expect the anchor to budge, but just in case, he had an emergency cutoff built into the energy transfer cable, powering the pulsed magnetic array. He planned on a night test, assuming it would be more inconspicuous. It seemed a reasonable assumption. Kepler initiated this third test at 11 p.m. on a Wednesday night. The spear groaned as it expanded, making a low-frequency humming noise, which soon went away. As the lever reached 2 vacuum space, there was a glow that began to emanate from the spear, but so far so good, so Kepler proceeded to 3 times vacuum space. The anchor, a ship's anchor from a World War II battleship, began to move. It was barely noticeable. slow. Then the chain, the anchor, and the spear began to glow blue. And even though Kepler lived in the country, the glow was beginning to illuminate. I gotta drink some coffee here. The glow was beginning to illuminate the night sky, a glow that was stretching over the horizon. Another curious thing, at this point, Kepler decided to trigger the automatic cutoff, but nothing happened. His computer, which had been tracking power drain, showed a net charge to 100% and then cut off all charge from the system. This happened at 2x vacuum space. The system, the sphere, was powering itself and seemingly getting more and more power. There had been theories going around about zero-point energy, and for a long time it was pixie dust theoretical vapor, vaporware bullshit. But what Kepler was seeing looked a lot like energy from nothingness. Energy from that other place beyond the veil. A farmer from down the road showed up with his wife and family. They were immediately drawn to the glowing blue orb, now untethered from power and slowly growing larger and drifting higher. The anchor was now at treetop height, above the roof of Kepler's barn. "What is that thing?" cried the farmer. And at that moment, his son, daughter, and wife, who had moved too close to the object, were pulled onto it, absorbed into it. "What the hell is that thing?" the farmer screamed as he ran to save his kids and wife, and he too was pulled up into that glowing blue orb, swallowed by something weird. Something was out of control. Kepler drove his truck to the road, blocking it, turning on his emergency lights, hoping this would deter others from showing up. He tried to think of doing something, but as the orb rose, as it grew larger, he could see that the vacuum impermeable envelope had been absorbed. The chain and even the 50-ton anchor, all of it, pulled into, sucked into, combined with, annihilated by that glowing blue orb. A glowing blue orb that was now hundreds of feet in diameter and almost a half a mile up in the sky. And it was moving faster and getting bigger. After about 20 minutes, the orb was high enough that it lit up most of the county and was nearing 30,000 feet in altitude. Kepler was monitoring the lever with his telescope, never imagining this would be necessary. And then, in an instant, almost as soon as the whole thing had happened, almost as soon as the fear and the terror was pulling apart Kepler, that blue glowing spear was gone. It had disappeared. The police showed up to check on his neighbors, the Browns. He didn't have a good answer as to what happened, but there didn't appear to be any foul play. After 4 hours of questioning, Kepler was released, no charges. There were some newspaper people, bloggers, and others that showed up, but after about a month, most people forgot. The whole event lasted only about an hour, and in that sleepy county, most were asleep when it happened. Days went by, days and weeks went by, and people simply forgot. Kepler continued to study the problem, but did no more experiments. A few months after the event, Kepler began having nightmares. A strange entity he could not see, named Zifter, would lay behind him in bed and speak into his ear as he lay there paralyzed. Kepler would see strange symbols on the wall when Zifter whispered into his ear. And then he heard some very strange phrases. Zifter to Mordelos was spoken on multiple occasions. Kepler had a friend who was a linguist, so he drew the symbol and wrote out the complete set of words the entity spoke. Zifter tu mordelos, neutos de, neutos be, cornofom. His friend, during some free time, traced down the root words to Sumerian, Latin, Sanskrit, and ancient Greek and Chinese. It's some kind of random word salad. It doesn't mean anything, Kepler. Kepler counted the triangles in the symbol. There were three. There were three circles, two vertical lines, nine chevrons, 3219, 33219. None of this meant anything. A few weeks after speaking to his academic friend, Kepler had another nightmare, but this one was more than words and a waking dream. In his nightmare, Kepler was known as Yug, the Lance Hound. He was the gatekeeper of Zur. As the gatekeeper, he kept the sides separated, bounded only to their nexus and unable to frequent outer zones of foreign lands. As the gatekeeper, Kepler would wander the three zones, of the three quadrants, with his two dogs and his one wife and his nine children. Yours are the latter-day children. Their minds are few, some voice said to him, and then he woke up sweaty and shaking. The nightmares got worse, and Kepler began to see the farmer and his family in these dreams, these nightmares. The farmer would use the motion of his hands to point out the crooked lines of the universe. His children, burned and mutilated, would sing of some strange kind of song, some weird song, off-key. And the wife, dressed in white, wrote another symbol in blood upon the ground. Kepler sequestered himself from the world and began seeing a therapist. He hoped it was merely a psychological break and not some worse scenario related to the experiment. He was now haunted by that rising blue light and that dreadful night. He feared that somehow, some way, the government had discovered his work and was continuing his experiments. Kepler was never a drinker, but he began to drink, slowly at first and then obsessively. He would wander those country roads, drinking whiskey and randomly muttering phrases and words. One of the phrases was Zector space, he would randomly mutter over and over again. This is the space between nothing and something. This space was zero space removed. Space outside is what Kepler would say. Kepler's mood was morose and withdrawn. He stopped going to work, stopped checking messages or emails. He would just go on these long walks in the countryside and lose track of time and place. He'd walk for hours and end up at some location, not fully understanding how he got there. Then one gray and confused morning in February, Kepler stumbled upon a note written by him, but it wasn't him. The handwriting was wrong, but it was his paper, it was his pen, it was him. It read as following. It read as follows. I gotta drink a little coffee here. It read as follows. Keyboard, Zector space has been broken. Previous epochs of human experience are no longer applicable to rend you cycles. The crevice was created to hide a secret, but the space is no longer there. Pulling the insides out, you can remember that your slug people came forth in a time of boiling lands and somber winds. A great rain ushered forth your people from that morass that once stayed dead. Keep your words clean. Amidst this torrid disturbance, the Sector 12 security forces have been called up. All 9-level ether riders are being rerouted to fill holes in Sector 44-477. You were meant to be damned, but no one came to take you away. You were meant to be destroyed, but no one came to shoot you in the head. You were meant to hide. So where does this bravado, where does it come from? Tulig Heg Toyo, Tulig Heg Ori, is the battle cry now. And flower madness among the theater is visible. And you are now gone, signed Zifter. Kepler knew Keeb Realm Stubers were headed his way. He had been on the run with his wife and 9 kids since the transcendental freaks of Fourth Pyramid began their rule and sent forth the moon hounds to chase down all the gatekeepers. In the storm-bent times, Keeblore could be seen in those mountains, in parlay with the cave apes and the dormant sand bats. His fire ran deep and true, and the eye of creation stood guard overhead in blue. Barrett Timms, the last of the lance trollers, considered Keeblore his friend, but he coveted his dogs and his children and his wife. So Barrett hid near the Trelter Kingdom. Barrett burned the third ugliness into his heart. And the farmer was sent to hell. And his children were divvied up. And their souls were given to ghostly spirits. Charlie went to Hebuzz and to dwell among Jorgling folk in the caves of Hoog. James went to Uriel, the dead select, leader of the fringe barbers, waiting for the new moon. Mary was to be given to Eeg and her flesh cauldron, lording over the lost children of the Sunderworld. Jill came late to the party and was taken to the silver god Jaden and to sojourn with the Mist Beetles. Harold was kept by Pugsplane and told the tales of 7-Eleven gropers and the second removal. Kirk was taken by Destra and held in a prison 45 light years from Earth. Hannah ended up with the Vergen, the Rollerbane, who rules over the gas merchants and Deegan priests. Jed was left with the Lord of the Dead, and it's said he watches. He watches you even now, as you hear this voice. Marty left the party as the Del breath wafted about and the Wookiee master glared at the red sun. And this was Zector space, broken from Zifter, broken down from Zifter to the time of Revelation. Each god would have his own home in the wall, and every wall would have a crack or a hole or a crevice. And in the stains and chipped paint, hiding in those worlds are the stolen and lost children. In the stains on that wall is the beast that is always lurking, always watching. In the scars of the world lay a never slain fear. If you enjoy this podcast and you'd like to hear more of it, well, that's great. That's great news. Currently, I have to cover food, water, shelter, things like that, you know, rent, as they say. And I am behind on rent for last month, and I need to come up with rent for this month. So, you know, if you want to donate money, you can. You don't have to. But before you donate anything, please listen to the following. Number one, please take care of yourself. Take care of your food, your water, your shelter. Before you send me any money, make sure you're doing okay. If you've set aside some food for the future, the near future, and I think 6 months isn't crazy, think about your pets, your dog, your cat. You know, your dog and cat could help you at some point in the near future. You never know. If there are people in your life that need help, think about them too first. You know, there might be a person in your life, a brother, a sister, a mom or a dad, someone, a friend who could use some help. So help that person first. And try to find some joy. Because nobody knows what's happening next other than God. If you're an atheist, then all you have to hear right now is nobody knows what's going to happen next, period. And if all you know is that the future is a big question mark, and that's the way it's always been and always will be, then why not try to be happy? I'm not saying blow all your money on cocaine and hookers. You can send that cocaine, hooker money to me. No, I mean find some joy. Do the things that you've been postponing. Call the person you haven't called in a while. Send an email to somebody you said you were going to do it for the last couple years, but you didn't do. Don't pretend there's ever been a scenario where putting off stuff until tomorrow makes the situation better. So do it today. And if you've done all these things, if you've taken care of your family, your friends, the people you care about, you've set aside some food for you and your pets, you've tried to find some joy, and you still have massive amounts of silver and gold left over, well, you can donate to this podcast. I would love it if you did. You don't have to, is my point. I know times are hard. And I also know that a lot of what I have to talk about isn't very heartening. It isn't very helpful psychologically for a lot of people. It goes against the grain. I wish I could believe that the future was going to be different, but I don't think it's going to be. I think long term, as I would say, there are good times and bad times. Short term, the next few decades, I think, are going to be really tough. And that's a nice way of putting it. I don't know how bad because I'm not God. But if you were to ask me, do I think it's going to be a recession or stagflation or even hyperinflation, I'd say probably not. I think we've done all those things already. I think we shot our wad. We can pretend all we want to that raising the debt ceiling was an act of courage and leads to prosperity, but a rational person would look at that act and say, this is the end. It's over. All we can do is keep raising debt. We no longer have the ability as a nation to pay our bills. It's over. Yeah, we can drop nukes on people. We can blow people up. We can steal their oil. But as Napoleon once said, the one thing you can't do with bayonets is sit on them. So if you're going to go down the road to be bloody and militaristic, you're going to have to do it constantly and forever. And at some point, a society gets tired of that. At some point, you want to sit down, and all you got are bayonets. No chairs. So if you like this podcast, donate to it if you want to. If you don't want to, that's okay too. That's usually pretty much why I wait to the end to beg for money. It is Wednesday, almost 3 a.m. Almost 3 a.m. Wednesday morning, if you can believe it, on June the 14th. Holy crap, 2023. Be careful of Zector space. It's everywhere. Zector space is soft and hard. Zector space is filled with edges. Zector space is filled with concertina wire. Zector space is filled with wolves and large tigers. Zector space is all around you. When you go to sleep at night, that's when it starts to glow. Once you go to sleep and close your eyes, sometimes you open your eyes and it doesn't turn off fast enough and you can see it. And from Zector space, every demon, every monster you can imagine is right there behind it. All it's waiting for is for you to close your eyes. Have a great rest of your Wednesday.